Our guest is co-director of the Comprehensive COVID-19 Center at Northwestern University, which has cared for nearly 3,000 long haulers from 44 states.
Long COVID patients are still there. We see patients in the clinic who had, let's say, 7 episodes of COVID-19, and then they picked up long COVID after the third one. There's data being published already out of Canada and other countries that the more episodes of COVID-19 people have, the higher the risk.
Dr. Igor Koralnik brings us his insights about the latest on long COVID. This is the second part of our series on this topic.
We saw a lot of patients in televisits from all over the U.S. Sometime patient told us, well, they may be neurologists in my area in California, Florida, let's say, but nobody is either interested or willing to take care of me. And so that's why I'm coming to, you know, Chicago in televisit.
This is Conversations on Healthcare.
Dr. Koralnik, welcome to Conversations on Healthcare.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, we understand there are roughly 17 million adults in the U.S. with long COVID, and there are estimates it carries enormous health and economic burdens for patients. I wonder if you could tell our listeners about your center and its mission.
Certainly. So I'm a neuro-HIV specialist by training, and then I expanded my interest to all neuroinfectious disease. So in December 2019, when the pandemic started here in the U.S., I was well placed to try to understand what was going on with this new disease. And actually, we started seeing a lot of patients being hospitalized with a horrible pneumonia and a brain alteration, including encephalopathy. We thought that we should open my clinic, my neuro infectious disease clinic, for those patients when they would be discharged from the hospital. But in fact, the majority of the people that we saw coming to the clinic were people who were not hospitalized with pneumonia, had a very mild case of COVID-19, sore throat, cough that went away, but then developed those lingering and debilitating complications, including brain fog, fatigue, headache, dizziness, and so on. And so to date, we have seen more than 3,000 patients in the clinic with neurologic manifestation of COVID-19 over the past 5 years. In the clinic opened in May 2020 for those patients. In September 2020, Northwestern Medicine opened a comprehensive COVID center that counted 12 specialties at the time, including pulmonology, cardiology, gastroenterology, and so on. We added two other specialty recently, gynecology and ophthalmology. Now we have 14 specialty clinics for the total care of long COVID patients. So when patients come to the center, they don't need a physician referral. They can just call, get an appointment. They are triaged by a nurse to the different clinic that they need to see. So if they say they have brain fog and palpitation and shortness of breath, they will come to neurology, pulmonology, and cardiology in parallel, right? And so they see those different specialists, and in each clinic, we see patients for 1 hour for a new appointment. We establish a differential diagnosis followed by investigation to rule out other disease, and every patient has a specialized plan of treatment.
Well, that is really quite remarkable, and I've learned some things just from your opening comment there. And I think the biggest one is then there is no one specific treatment for COVID. You've got 14 different specialty centers operating under one roof, and congratulations on getting that all up by May of 2020, when most of the world was still trying to figure out what was going on. But given that it's very complex, very complicated, it would seem, to effectively treat patients with COVID, how does your center coordinate the care of people so that people are not being treated by organ system, but treated with the comprehensive set of problems that they bring to you?
So that's a very excellent question. And long COVID is a multi-system syndrome that may affect any organ system, actually, and some in combination, brain, heart, lung, GI, endocrinology, and so on. And so this is because all this started during the lockdown, right? So we didn't have the time and the possibility to build a brick and mortar, you know, new building on the Northwestern campus downtown. So it was a virtual center that started from everybody's existing clinic. At the beginning, we saw a lot of patients in televisits, right? So I saw patient televisits from 44 states in the U.S. when we did not need to be licensed in every state to see patients. And so we formed this comprehensive COVID center where we coordinated the care through this triage system at the beginning. And then patients could be referred from one specialty to the other. We had weekly and or monthly team meeting to try to coordinate the care of those patients, also try to understand what we were seeing in neurology and what they were seeing in pulmonology and in GI and endocrinology, dermatology, and so on, to try to make sense of this new syndrome, right, that nobody had seen before. And I became the co-director of the Comprehensive COVID Center together with the pulmonologist, Dr. Mark Sala, who is seeing patients himself in the pulmonology clinic, and we try to coordinate or care the best we can, and trying to understand the advances that are happening in every specialty. We also have a long COVID support group now for our patients who come to the Comprehensive COVID Center. It meets on Zoom every month, on a fixed schedule. There's always a specialist of the Comprehensive COVID Center that comes to talk to the patients for 15 minutes about their area of expertise. And then a licensed social worker is there to lead the group after that, provide emotional support for the patients. Patients can meet each other, understand more about what's going on in other specialties and in other patients, and move forward with that.
You know, Margaret, we've had the opportunity to talk to a number of long COVID specialists at Yale and NYU, and I guess I shouldn't be surprised by anything that we've heard about long COVID, but one of the more surprising findings is that there are patients who've never tested positive for COVID, but now find themselves with long COVID. I'm wondering if you can shine a light on that for some of our listeners out there, Doctor.
Certainly. And that was a big problem at the beginning. You remember during the lockdown, especially, you could not get a test if you're not seriously sick with pneumonia in the hospital, intubated, you know, because of COVID pneumonia. And a lot of our patients at the beginning, actually half of the patients during the first 6 months probably of the clinic were in this predicament. They had symptoms consistent with COVID-19, but they, you know, they could stay at home. They did not have to be hospitalized. And therefore, they were not tested on time, or tests were not available in their geographic area. And they ended up having, you know, survived a mild case of COVID-19, but then developed those debilitating long COVID symptoms. Yet they were rejected by, you know, medical professionals and other centers because they didn't have a diagnosis of SARS-CoV-2 infection in the first place. So because we understood those limitations and we wanted to be as, you know, inclusive as possible, we deliberately decided not to require a positive SARS-CoV-2 test, either, you know, PCR, home test, or a serological test for patients to be evaluated in the clinic. And so we saw a number of patients at the beginning who had exactly the same long COVID symptoms, yet they were not diagnosed formally with the COVID-19 at the time. And we decided just to treat them just the same with supportive measures, differential diagnosis, ruling out other conditions. And we've done this ever since in every clinic of the Comprehensive COVID Center at Northwestern.
Well, it's so important to be having this conversation now when I think, you know, people have turned away somewhat from COVID. But for the people with long COVID, of course, there's no turning away, right, until you improve. You're in Chicago. Sounds like you were a center of all of this going on during the COVID pandemic. I assume at medical centers and healthcare facilities around the country now, there's some common approaches to treating long COVID. But as you talk about, again, the multiplicity of organ systems involved in the different clinical presentations, have we gotten to a place where we have common agreement on treatment protocols, even if it's for different manifestations of the same disease, or are we still figuring it out?
So I wish it was, as you said, that now we have common protocols and, you know, treatment that we know work for patients. Unfortunately, it's not the case. You know, we had the long COVID awareness day, the first long COVID awareness day on March 15, 2025, marking the first 5 years of the pandemic. Obviously, different geographic area were struck differently by the first wave of COVID-19. Obviously, in New York, it was worse than anywhere else in the country. It came to Chicago a little bit after that. There are different centers that were created out of sheer need, you know, to take care of those patients. At some point, I counted about 60 around the country for a publication that we put together. But unfortunately, I've heard that many have actually started to close down for the reason that you mentioned, that people now have moved on from the height of the pandemic. Nobody is dying anymore from COVID-19 pneumonia. We are not talking about, you know, how many respirators we can get, you know, for those patients. And that's great. But COVID, long COVID patients are still there. We see patients in the clinic who had, let's say, 7 episodes of COVID-19, and then they picked up long COVID after the third one. There's data being published already out of Canada and other countries that the more episodes of COVID-19 people have, the higher the risk for them to develop long COVID. And so since vaccination boosters are not preventing new infections, then I think that the number of patients is going to continue to increase. Epidemiologists have estimated that worldwide, there is more than 400 million people who have long COVID, costing the economy about $1 trillion per year, about 1% of the global economy. So it is really significant problem. Since I'm a global neurologist, we have started collaboration in Nigeria, in Colombia, and in India, started NeuroCOVID program there as well, and published on those patient populations. So long COVID is not an American invention. It exists everywhere in the world. Here we started to be deluged with patients, and then we did the research to try to figure out in those other countries, you have to do the research first to show that the disease is there and to try to justify that those patients need to have clinical care as well. So going back to your initial question about protocol and understanding, I think that the more people publish about their experience, the better, you know, other people get informed about the options that we have to take care of those patient. There is no uniform protocol, you know, for treating those manifestations. We have published what we've been doing in 2022 here at Northwestern for the neurologic manifestation, both inpatients and outpatients. Others have published also on their experience in other centers. There are clinical trials that have been ongoing for the treatment of long COVID, let's say with Paxlovid, this antiviral medication. There are two trials that have been independently done in other places in the US and showed no benefit from Paxlovid in a smaller sample. There's a trial from the Recover Initiative sponsored by NIH that is close to enrollment now and is being analyzed. But unfortunately, there is still no diagnostic test for long COVID and no specific treatment for the root cause of long COVID.
Well, Margaret, I think that's what our listeners probably wanted to ask is have we seen out there? Anything that's promising on the horizon as you sort of look at research across the globe? It sounded like Paxlovid might work some cases, might not. We also heard that in this first 6 or 8 months for a subset of the population, the symptoms diminish. But I think that's not true for everyone who has it. But what do you think is promising out there? What line of research are you keeping an eye on?
All right. So excellent question. Different etiologies have been entertained for the root cause of long COVID, and they're not mutually exclusive. They may, you know, be together at the same time. So viral persistence is one. The virus remains hidden or dormant in some places in the body and needs to be treated with antiviral medication. The treatment of Paxlovid, at least in these two smaller studies for 14 to 20 days, was not efficient. We will wait for the result of this larger study that is now, we enrolled patients at Northwestern in many sites in the country, and we will wait for the result of this study. That's one thing. Another is autoimmunity. The virus comes and confuses the immune system that there's something abnormal in the body that needs to be attacked. We see that in our clinic and in every post-COVID clinic, actually, there is a predominance of women. So 2/3 of the patients are women, and we know that women are more likely than men to develop other autoimmune disease like multiple sclerosis, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, and so on. And we see also an enrichment in the patient population of people who had prior autoimmune disease before COVID-19. So there probably is an autoimmune predisposition. We are working on this in my lab. Other labs are also looking at this. So far, there is no medication or immunomodulatory medication that has come out of this research, which is still ongoing. Third possibility is that long COVID is caused by a microvascular disease. And you know that the spike protein of the virus can bind the ACE2 receptor on the surface of endothelial cells, for example, lining the blood vessel, and can trigger some inflammation or even infection of these cells. And we have published recently a study looking at the microvascular structure of the retina in the back of the eye using a ophthalmological technique called optical coherence tomography angiography with a lead ophthalmologist here at Northwestern, Dr. Manjot Gill. And we have seen a decrease in the caliber of very small vessel in the retina in patients with neurologic complication of COVID-19. And so it is possible that this decreased perfusion that we see in the eye is actually a window on the brain and other organs and could cause some of the symptomatology that the patients have. And so that may be treatable with different modalities, but we need to follow those patients over time to see if it's actually a real physical biomarker of long COVID. And this is what we're doing currently in my lab.
Wow. Well, fascinating work going on, Dr. Correll, Nick. And I, at risk of getting the acronym wrong, I'm going to ask you about a session I sat in on at the National Academy of Science, Engineering, and Medicine a few weeks ago, participated virtually. It was focused on Lyme disease and long-term Lyme, but they talked about what they called infection-associated chronic illness. I think IACI, am I correct on that, that's the acronym?
Yes, it's an acronym, yes.
An acronym that's being used. And I thought of long COVID in this sense and the struggle that people have and the struggle that entire populations have in this instance of trying to prove a disability or a limitation in their energy, their ability to work, their ability to function without the usual markers of positive tests or positive treatment protocols. What's your sense of where we are as a country? You talked about an enormous number of people that are sufferers of long COVID. How well do you think the country has responded in terms of support for people, recognizing it as a disability, making sure that we can take care of people, provide the emotional support if we don't have treatments where we can. You're in the bird's eye view of this. What are you seeing?
Well, it was an unexpected occurrence, obviously, in 2019 and early 2020, to see all those patients coming down with this new syndrome, affecting them so much in their quality of life, cognitive function, ability to work. It was during the lockdown, so there was not a lot of possibilities to move around. We saw a lot of patients in televisits from all over the U.S., sometime patients told us, well, they may be neurologists in my area in California, Florida, let's say, but nobody is either interested or willing to take care of me. And so that's why I'm coming to, you know, Chicago in televisit. So I think that people responded as best they could in their, you know, area, in their geographic area. The fact of the matter is that the entire world was consumed with COVID-19 at some point, with a lot of death from pneumonia. Now that that phase, fortunately, is over, people tend to move on, as you said, and then maybe not pay as much attention as they should to the plight of long COVID patients. Even we have patients coming to see us, they only have problem with the smell and taste, right? They're, you know, cognition is fine, they are not fatigued, they can run the marathon, yet their quality of life is severely affected because everything that they smell smells like rancid fish, right? And so unfortunately, there's no specific treatment for that. In time, patients tend to improve to some extent. And so the question about disability is always a tough one, because we know that some patients will improve in weeks and months and be back to normal after that. But there are some patients who still suffer from the same cognitive problem despite cognitive rehabilitation that we give them at Shirley Ryan Ability Lab across the street from Northwestern, despite other, you know, stimulant medication that they may take, they still suffer from fatigue. And so it is not clear yet if those patients will have this chronic condition that will last for years or decades, or if they are going to, you know, get better at some point. We have developed an app, actually, that has been adapted by Northwestern Medicine IT department to be integrated into the patient's interface called MyChart for our patients to be able to log in their daily symptom, brain fog, yes, no, fatigue, yes, no, and also what their percent recovered, subjective impression of recovery compared to pre-COVID baseline in percent every day, so that we can track their, and they can also track their own road to recovery on long COVID. And these patients are enrolled in the study. We also measure their blood biomarkers. We measure their capillary microvessel by optical coherence tomography, angiography. And so hopefully by doing this longitudinal fund study, hopefully will be funded by NIH, we will be able to have a better sense of how long is the road to recovery from long COVID, and what distinguish people who are the improvers compared to those who are actually stable or even worsened over time.
Margaret, we're not surprised it's a long road. We had Dr. Fauci on four or five times during the pandemic. We had him on January 2020, and the one thing he reminded us that coronavirus mutates all the time. It's very hard to sort of nail down, and it will continue to be a problem.
There's a National Center for Health Statistics together with the U.S. Census Bureau that has carried out a household pulse study on long COVID over the past couple of years. The last data point was in September 2024, and you had data from every state, every age group, every sexual orientation, you know, a lot of other information about the patient who are the people who took this study. And the estimates, it's always obviously an estimate, but that 17.9% of all US adults ever had long COVID. And if you take a population of adult about 260 million people in the US. So it's about 47 million people. 5.3% of all adults currently suffered from long COVID at the time of the last time point. So it's about 13 million people. And of those, 80% has any activity limitation of long COVID. So it's about 11 million people. So it's like the population of New York plus Chicago put together. So I think this is the best data that we have from the National Center for Health Statistics and the US Census Bureau. Certainly very serious outlets, you know, for measuring the number of people who have a typical disease in the country. If you would just Google long COVID household pulse study, it's housed on the CDC website. You can click on the link, go on the table, and see all the data for yourself. I think that's a very interesting exercise.
I know our time is running a little bit short, but I have to ask you, certainly we've seen some research that found no significant differences in long COVID symptom severity between patients who were vaccinated or not vaccinated or vaccinated after a preceding course of COVID infection. Is that accurate to say? Is that what your research bears out? Did being vaccinated make a difference in whether or not you developed long COVID if you did get infected?
So the question is, do vaccine alter the presentation of long COVID? And at the beginning of the pandemic, there were a lot of urban legends that vaccine either cured long COVID or vaccine made long COVID worse. We looked at this in our patient population at the beginning and we didn't see any effect. And more recently, we published a paper in brain communications on 1,300 patients seen in the clinic. The first 1,300 patients seen in the clinic, including 200 who had previously been hospitalized for pneumonia and 1,100 who were never hospitalized. And we looked at patients who got COVID, got vaccinated, and then developed long COVID, compared to those who got vaccinated, got COVID after that, and then developed long COVID. And those two populations were almost identical, right? So in this study, based on my clinic population, and we did not see any effect of the vaccine on the subsequent development of long COVID. Some data comes from large epidemiological studies, for example, from the VA hospitals and others, where they saw that patients who got vaccinated had a decreased incidence of long COVID after the fact, but a mild decrease, maybe 15 to 30% at best. But when we see them coming in the clinic, whether they had COVID before or after the vaccination, if they develop long COVID, it's really the same disease.
A great note to end on. Congratulations for that accomplishment. I'm sure that was a very high moment, not the last high moment, but a very high moment in your career. So thank you, Dr. Karelnik, for joining us. Thank you to our audience for being here. And just a reminder to be sure to subscribe to our videos on YouTube, find us on Facebook and X, and please share your thoughts and your comments about this program. Take care and be well. This copyrighted program is produced by Conversations on Healthcare and cannot be reproduced or retransmitted in whole or in part without the express written consent from Community Health Center, Inc. The views expressed by guests are their own, and they do not necessarily reflect the opinion of Conversations on Healthcare or its affiliated entities.